Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with Britt Davis, a graphic designer for the Atlanta Falcons. We talk about going to Savannah College of Art and Design for grad school, her time at Spike TV, how she got into sports design, superhero movies, Star Wars, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prince for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prince can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prince can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners, Jack Prince can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prince has their lowest prices on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? $300? More? You can get it at Jack Prince for just $70. While we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prince is offering a free silver ink upgrade going on right now. But it's not just on silver ink. If you're looking to get something embroidered, you can get free silver thread, too. So when you get something printed or embroidered, now, through the end of the year, add some silver ink into that design. If you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prince Pocket Notes. They come with tons of great options, making them perfect for gifts, giveaways, branding, and custom office supplies. Custom pocket notebooks are sized for quick sketching and note-taking. Plus, unlike other printers who, you know, make you design around their logo and have all those parameters like that, Jack Prince builds their custom notebooks from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in vivid full color. Jack Prince makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prince is giving you a great discount. You can save up to $75 on your next order. Just use promo code CS16podcast at checkout or visit jack.ink/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Britt, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's kick things off with, where did you grow up?
Well, I'm originally from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Grew up there, high school, everything, and then stayed in state for college, for undergrad, went to North Carolina State. And then after graduating from North Carolina State, which is in Raleigh, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And then I moved to Atlanta.
So when you were growing up, were you an arty kid? Normally when I ask this, I'm just trying to gauge people. But with you, there's a specific reason for asking it. Were you an arty kid or were you more into sports?
I was definitely more into art. My parents got all the sports genes and my brother and everybody but me. So I just stuck with art. The closest thing I got to sports was marching band and playing soccer in the backyard with my dad, and tennis. You know, I had tennis lessons, and my granddad's been trying to get me into golf, but unsuccessfully. So I stuck with art and design.
You know, I've been trying to get into golf since I was a little kid, and I'm still horrible at it. And now it's just gotten too expensive to play.
Yeah, I got clubs and everything. I think they had high hopes, but it just didn't work out. So, but I try to play when I go home.
Sure.
When I'm with my granddad, but it's a tough game.
No, I understand completely. So growing up, you're in arts. When you get, you know, at what point do you discover what graphic design is?
I guess high school. My art teacher, Matt Fussell, he was the one who really kind of showed me a world outside of just like fine arts, which is what I was doing up through high school. Like I was doing a lot of portraits and landscapes and things like that. But after talking to my parents, it just seemed like unless I was, you know, Michelangelo, I wasn't going to be making a lot of money.
I don't even think he made a lot of money when he was doing it.
No, he did. Not when he was alive. So my parents kind of helped me, and my art teacher kind of helped me just gauge out some different options. And that's when I started looking at design, because I told him that, you know, I was like, I love taking things apart. I love, you know, learning how things work. Mm-hmm. And so that's when he actually suggested industrial design. And that's what I studied undergrad, industrial design. It was like the perfect combination of, you know, engineering, taking things apart, drawing. And I got into graphic design probably like my junior year of college. My roommate was a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
So we would kind of look at each other's projects, and I thought what she was doing was really cool. And once the industrial design industry wasn't looking that great when I graduated, I kind of had graphic design as a backup, and that was my minor. And so doing freelance stuff, I did a lot of club flyers. Not proud of
it. Seems to be a common theme when I talk to people. A lot of club flyers.
Yeah, I did a lot of club flyers. I still got them, you know, and that's kind of that kind of helped introduce me to the world of graphic design, like using a lot of Photoshop, Illustrator, and then just general layout. And then from there, I was like, this is actually kind of cool. So then I got my first design job, and that was at UNC Charlotte as a graphic designer.
So you end up, after NC State, you end up moving to Charlotte. You're working at UNC Charlotte. What are you doing there?
There I was my official title was a visual arts specialist. So I was working in the student affairs under a division called Student Union Activities and Recreation, and it was responsible for a lot of the on-campus programming. So I was doing a lot of posters, flyers, logos, lots and lots and lots of t-shirts. It was a really cool time to be on campus because that's right when the student union opened. And they were also getting ready to get their own football team. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on campus, and being there at the right time just kind of helped me learn a lot of new things with graphic design, and just also have a lot of creative freedom to kind of try out a lot of new stuff. So it was a really nice introduction and a really, really great first job straight out of college.
Mm-hmm. So when you end up leaving UNC Charlotte, did you go straight to the Falcons at that point, or did you land something else?
I was with the Falcons. So I was with UNC Charlotte for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And that was my very first job out of college. So this job where I am now with the Falcons, with A&B Sports and Entertainment, which is Falcons, the stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and our new soccer team, Atlanta United, is only my second job. So it's been pretty cool.
I'd say that says a lot about you as far as career path of wanting to have a career versus having a bunch of jobs.
Yeah, it was just a good fit. Like I said, I was just, you know, really blessed to be able to get a job like that right out of school, and then to land this job with the Falcons right out of grad school. So it worked out really, really well.
So you said grad school. So you ended up going to grad school as well.
Yes. So okay.
We glossed over that. We got to talk about these things.
Getting a job at UNC Charlotte, I knew I wanted to go back to school. So naturally I was like, hey, I could take classes here. Especially one of the benefits of working at a university,
free tuition.
So I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'll go for an MBA. Cause I know a lot of people who did it, and I was like, it seems like a good path. And at the time I was kind of doing my own little freelance, and I kind of wanted to see if I could get that to grow. And I did, like 3.5 semesters. And once I got to like the economics portion, like I survived statistics and all this other stuff, I was like, I don't think this is the right choice.
Wait, you survived statistics, but you changed your mind when you got to economics?
Yeah, it was like the statistics I can handle, but the economics part, I was like, I don't even think I made it through like the drop week. I think I stopped before we could even, I think I did like 3 weeks and I was like, I'm good. I can't do this. So then I stayed at UNC Charlotte and looked at communication studies. I did that for like a semester and I didn't really like that either, but it was good because it just kind of kept my mind in school mode. Sure. So between undergrad and starting grad school at UNC Charlotte, I think I maybe had a year off. So having that buffer was nice, but then picking right back up and being in a graduate level program kind of helped me prepare for my real graduate program, which was at Savannah College of Art and Design.
Okay.
Where I did a MFA in graphic design. Like, I knew I wanted to do a more formal program to kind of help with my minor. Mm-hmm. And it was rough. It was because I was going to school full time and working full time. Like I had a house and everything in Charlotte, so I didn't want to, you know, pack up and leave. And plus, I really liked my job at UNC Charlotte. Plus, because you're working at a school, they're super supportive. So, you know, when anytime you want to go back to school and you're working at a school, you know, it's encouraged. So I had a great support system there, great support system with my family. So.
Well, how are you balancing that time? Were you doing online studies or?
Yes, it was. I did my program online, and I would go down to Atlanta, you know, a couple times, you know, for registration or to check out programs. But pretty much the program was done online, with the exception of I took one semester to do an internship in New York City. So I saved up all my vacation time from UNC Charlotte so that I could take a leave of absence without losing my job or having to resign. And so I was able to do a full summer in New York working with Spike TV. So that was really cool because I, you know, got to experience living in the city. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. Really different from the South, but still.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, still a lot of fun. But I have family up there. So being able to hang out with them and see them and then experience the city life for myself, and then also realize that it's not for me. I figured I'd be better off in the South. So I knew I was
a little more laid back approach there.
Yeah. But it was a great experience. And then it just kind of furthered that I knew I wanted to work in like sports and entertainment. So
sure. So when you're doing this internship at Spike, what are you working on?
So my biggest projects while I was there, working with the new season of Ink Master that was coming out. I think at the time it was the Rivals edition. And then they were launching a couple of documentaries, so getting to work on those. And then also getting to work on their app launch. They were, you know, developing a new app. Mm-hmm. And then being on the initial team to develop ideas for their new rebrand. So their new logo that they rolled out. They rolled it out, I think, a year after I left. But I got to actually do initial sketches on that. So that was a lot of fun.
I didn't even know they had a new logo.
it was launched maybe like 2 years ago. So it's not so new anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be why I don't remember it.
Yeah. And then a lot of their shows, it was mostly print, web, off-air graphics, social media stuff, and like promo graphics. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty cool. Not stuff you'd see like if you're watching Spike, but more stuff you'd see if you're on the website or their social media accounts, or if you're downloading a video from iTunes for their like video on demand stuff.
Sure.
So that was the stuff I did.
For people who aren't familiar, can you explain what on-air graphics were, even though I know you weren't really working on those?
Oh, yeah. So the on-air graphics are like when you're watching a television program, they have this thing called lower thirds that kind of like animate in the corner, which is just you might see the people, you know, fighting in the corner and say, this new show about these bros, you know, as roommates. And then the little logo pops up.
Well, it's Spike TV. Then, of course, everything's going to be about these bros.
It's all about the bros. So that was another kind of thing that helped me get ready for sports, working with a lot of guys. Also the promo stuff that comes up on the screen before and after one of their programs. So any kind of animation or video production stuff, that's all the on-air stuff.
Gotcha. And I'm assuming they have separate departments for those that
Yeah, it's one large creative department, but they have all these sub-departments. So web, social, off-air graphics, on-air graphics. And then they have, like, their own, like, photographers and everything. So I think it was about a team of, I think with interns, maybe, like, 15 people.
For a network of that size, that's a fairly small staff.
Yeah, Spike is one of the smaller because it's, like, you know, it's all owned by, like, Viacom. So each network kind of had their own team.
Everything's owned by Viacom.
Yeah, everything. I didn't realize it until I got there.
There's only like three companies that own all of the channels. It's Comcast, Viacom, and Time Warner.
Yep, yep. So I learned that they do have a footnote in a lot of channels. But it was pretty cool. Plus movies, like I think it's Paramount. It's one of their movie things that they own.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, all of the entertainment world is owned by three or four companies.
Yes.
So, excuse me. So you do your internship up there. Do you go back to UNC Charlotte for a little while or do you?
Yep. I went back for about a year and a half. And my initial plan was to stay there a little bit longer. But like I graduated, I was preparing to graduate. I was doing my thesis. My thesis was on celebrating into the future. It would be 2020, celebrating 100 years since the inaugural Negro League World Series or the Colored World Series, the Negro Leagues. So I had developed a campaign that was a traveling exhibit on this bus. So I had these sponsors lined up, you know, if I was going to propose this to an actual, you know, committee to get funding for it, I had this sponsor lined up. So it would be like a Greyhound bus fitted to be this mobile museum with all these artifacts and things about the team. And then there's an app and a website. It's really big campaign. And at the core of it was my research paper. So you had to do a visual thesis and you have to do a paper for your MFA at SCAD. So, you know, the thesis at the end, it's like 120 pages by the time you finish. But because it was a topic I was really passionate about and really wanted to learn about, it didn't really feel that bad.
So I got to ask, what was it, since you're not a huge, by your own admission, you weren't a huge sports person, what was it that got you interested in the Negro Leagues?
Well, for me with sports, because I wasn't athletic, you know, I still like to watch sports and for me, it was more the aesthetic of sports. So that's kind of what the thesis was about, like the uniform designs, the colors, the tradition, the nostalgia built into sports and how that kind of impacts the fan experience for those who were there versus those who weren't there. Like I could step into Yankee Stadium. You know, my first time going to the new stadium was when I was in New York. Mm-hmm. But based on the stories my dad would tell me when he was growing up going to those games, you know, you kind of feel that walking into the stadium, even if you hadn't been there. So how those experiences impact the fan and how sports teams and brands can kind of build on creating those experiences, you know, through authenticity, heritage and branding. So that was kind of the core of it. So it's like, I like, for me, with anything that I like, it's like something like deep down core nerdy stuff, like not just the stuff on the outside, but like I want to know how it got to that point. How can we utilize it? How can we build on it to, you know, make these really cool experiences? Why are the uniforms look that way? Why does the logo look like that? You know, when they change it, you know, what part should we preserve? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what the thesis was about. And those are the things within sports that I really like. Stats and stuff are cool. The athletes are cool, but I want to know more about the experience and the traditions, the stuff that's going to last and keep fans loyal and keep them coming back.
Sure. Yeah. Cause players change. Yep. I mean, everything changes, but it's in what cycles do things change and how do you keep a continuing theme that still remains true to the brand and to the league and all that stuff?
Yeah, but I kind of grown up with like, you know, like I said, around sports, but my parents, you know, big on history and teaching my brother and I history. And the Negro Leagues was kind of a cool point where I think it was my mom had taken me to like a talk of some actual players from the Negro Leagues at a university. Me and my brother, I think I was maybe like 8 or 9, and I still had the poster, and it was just such a cool looking poster, and just kind of to hear their stories, even at, you know, a young age, like, man, that sounds really, really cool. Like what you were doing, you played with Jackie Robinson and, mm-hmm. you know, Buck O'Neal and all these other really great players. Like these are people who, you know, were connected to them. And to kind of hear that, I was like, man, sports, there's another side to it that's actually really, really cool that I really like. So those are just the areas that I kind of focused on more so than what stats a certain player, you know, put up and, you know, what shoe endorsements that they got. Even though I love shoes, I love sneakers, you know, so that stuff is really cool too. But it was all about more the aesthetics of it, you know.
When we get into this, you're going to have to sell me on the whole sneaker culture thing, because I don't get it.
Oh, I have so many shoes. It's so bad.
I mean, I get cool shoes. I just don't get the whole, like, wasn't SneakerCon like last week or the week before?
Yeah, in Atlanta. I didn't get to go in Atlanta. I went to Charlotte. I went to the one in Charlotte, but I didn't get to do the one in Atlanta. But there are certain ones that I don't get into as far as hype. But, excuse me, I respect the design of them. Mm-hmm. But there are certain ones that I just, like, have to have, like, my ASICs. I think just because it's my favorite, I just love the shoe. I think I have at least 10 pairs of ASICs alone in all kinds of different colors. Some are the same colors, but I just like a different style of the shoe.
I think there was a while last year where you were posting, like, different shoe pictures every day, too.
Yeah. Well, some people post food pictures. I post food pictures. I post food pictures, too, but a lot of shoe pictures.
You and Ryan Hamrick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you go through grad school. You do this thesis. You do your internship. And you come back to UNC Charlotte. At what point do you decide it's time to move on? And
it wasn't even really like a step back and say, hey, you know what, it's time for me to move on. It was more just trying to be ready. Like, I knew I wanted to kind of make that transition into sports. So most of my projects in grad school, like I said, were centered around sports. Mm-hmm. I tried to do just passion projects centered around sports just to kind of get myself ready visually. Like I'd studied the history of it and the branding stuff, but then I had to kind of learn the aesthetics, because, you know, you look at sports, it has a defined look. Even sure. as we try to, you know, transition out of that, so not all our stuff looks the same, there's still a certain look, you know, when you're trying to sell sports. So I was actually at a conference in Chicago, HAL Design Live, I think it was, and the a director of creative services for the Falcons happened to be there. And Adam Martin, you know, from Makers of Sports, sent him a tweet. He was like, hey, you two are at the conference. You know, you should link up. You know, you're both into sports design and working in sports design. So I was like, okay, cool. And I think we actually happened to be going to the same session. So we met up, and I always keep my portfolio on my phone. So I was just kind of showing him some of my stuff.
And, I need to do that. That's a good idea.
Always be prepared. So he was like, yeah, you know, your stuff is good. You know, initially thinking about just getting some feedback, but he said, you know, we're looking to hire another designer. And I was like, you know, okay, cool. You know, so in my mind, I'm kind of like processing this. I'm like, okay, it's in Atlanta, which is not too far away from home. You know, my dad lives in Atlanta, so I wouldn't ever be by myself. Mm-hmm. You know, am I ready for this? And he said, you know, you should, if you're interested, you know, you should apply. So I was like, well, you know, why not? Even though it was kind of unexpected. So I applied. And then I think right after I applied, even I think before I called my mom to tell her what I was doing, I called Todd Radom, the godfather, the Todd father.
The Todd father. I was about to make the same joke.
he was actually on the committee for my thesis, and he's really been a really, really big help mm-hmm. In this process. Since meeting him a couple years ago, he's really amazing. But I called him, you know, for counsel. Said, you know, I have this opportunity. You know, should I do it? He was like, you know, I think you really should. You know, I think, you know, an opportunity like this, you know, to come, you know, around, you know, kind of just fall in your lap, you should definitely consider it. So I was like, okay. So I applied, and then as soon as I get back, I had an email from another firm in Charlotte that specialized in sports. I was like, this is the second one. Like, it must be really time for me to get into sports. So again, I called Todd about the other job. You know, we kind of helped me kind of compare, contrast, you know, pros and cons. And I said, you know, I think the Falcons one is going to be a better fit. So I finished the application. I get another reference from TJ Harley. He's here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then I get a phone call that says, hey, we'd like to interview you. And I was like, whoa, this is like moving super fast. I haven't even thought about like selling my house. Like, well, these things I have to do. My thesis draft is going to be due, you know, the next week. I'm getting ready to graduate in May. There's a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So they sent me a test project for the job. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited, you know, to kind of apply all these things that I've learned and put into practice to this new project. And I do the first project. There were two projects. But then I remembered my final thesis draft is due that same day. So I finished my thesis draft, and I'm getting ready to go to bed. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And then I remember as soon as I put my head on the pillow, like, oh, I got one more project to do for this project. I was like, oh, man. So I stay up, and it had some all these guidelines. So I kind of just winged it, and it really wasn't that good. So I'm like, man, I hope they don't hold it against me. But fortunately, they did give me a call back. And as soon as I got down there for the interview, they reviewed the projects with me. And I said, I just want to apologize for that second project. I can do way better. But my thesis draft was due the same day. And it was like 4 in the morning. So I just had to get something to you just to make sure you knew that I was really serious. And fortunately, they trusted the work that I had done for them, and then the work that I had in my portfolio, and I got the job. So it's been like a year and a half, maybe a little over a year and a half since I've been on the team. Mm-hmm. And a lot has happened, a lot of new things learned. Sold my house, told my parents, you know, I'm out of North Carolina. My first time living out of North Carolina permanently. But it's been really great. It's been really good.
Well, how has that process been for you? Because I know you and your mom are really close. Yeah. And she's still up in North Carolina. Yeah. So how has that process been for you? The, I guess, culture shock of moving to somewhere. I mean, thankfully you got your dad there. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. It was difficult at first, you know, just readjusting, because like all of my college friends are pretty much up there and, you know, settled down and, you know, there for the long haul. So leaving my friends and family, it was tough. They're only like 4 or 5 hours away. So, you know, I can get to them, but it's not like, hey, I'm just going to drop by, you know, one day or for the weekend. So it's been an adjustment. And the first couple months, I kind of stayed in my apartment and just drew or sketched or worked on a creative project. And then finally, my dad really kind of encouraged me, kind of more pushed me to, hey, you know, there's a lot to offer.
Encouraged you or forcefully told you to get your ass out of the house?
He's like, come on. Well, I have my own place and everything. You know, he lives, you know.
No. I mean, I mean, out of your house, not out of his house.
Yeah, he's like, you know, just. Cause I would call him, you know, he's like, I'm like, hey dad, what you doing? He's like, oh, I'm out. I'm hanging out. I'm like, I got to get a social life. My dad's got more social life than I do. So,
yeah, I mean, at a certain point, it's, you know, probably healthy to not be hanging out with your dad.
I know. Cause I'm close with him too.
No, I'm not teasing you.
But it was time to kind of get out more and, experience Atlanta what I could without, you know, getting stuck in traffic. But sometimes
but that's tough to do.
I'm just going to Netflix it today. Like too much traffic.
I can't blame you there.
Yeah. But I'm still adjusting. Like I love the job. Like the job is great, but I'm still like, even after a year or so adjusting to Atlanta, like it's just so much traffic. traffic.
It's a big city.
It's not as big as people think. It's just the surrounding areas.
Yeah, it's the surrounding areas. Because you've got Charlotte's at think, about the same size city-wise.
Yeah.
Like, overall, and population, it's not that far off. But I don't know. They are two very distinctly different cities.
Yeah. It's been an adjustment, I'd say, nonetheless. It's still an adjustment. But sure. But it's cool. Like, Atlanta has a lot of stuff to offer, and each day I'm trying to push myself to network a little bit more, hang out more, even if I go somewhere by myself, just to kind of figure out the city and, you know, maneuver around, and not just be in my apartment watching, you know, Netflix all day. Except, I mean, it's tough. The stuff that they offer, I mean, X-Men, the animated series, the original one with the really dope theme song, is on Hulu, so that's what I'm on right now, like every Saturday. It's just like Saturdays in the 90s. Bowl of cereal, cartoons. It's good. It's real good.
Oh, I won't, believe me, we'll get to your love of superheroes, because you and I can bond over that.
But yeah.
All the Funko Pop figures behind you?
Yeah.
So, you know, with starting this new job in a entirely sports industry, what's been the biggest kind of learning experience so far for you?
Photoshop. I was an Illustrator person, and I still prefer Illustrator. And I knew how to use Photoshop, you know, before, but pretty much 80% of what I did on a daily basis was done in Illustrator or InDesign, you know, a lot of multi-page stuff. When I got here, it flipped. Pretty much everything's Photoshop. Just because of the, you know, the retouching and the layouts and the stuff that we're doing, you know, you have to use Photoshop. So I have learned so many things about Photoshop, and it's funny. I'll be masking out a player, and our creative director might be walking by, and he'll see me just, you know, masking it out with the brush tool and you know, the mask on the image, and he's like, "Have you ever heard of like using focus area?" And I'm like, "No, what is that?" He's like, "It will change your life." And so he'll show me.
You're gonna
me,
have to teach me about that one.
What? It's like, it's crazy. I'm like, this, I've been doing this wrong the whole time. But that's just one of the really cool things about working on a team with more, you know, more designers. You know, we each kind of have a way we approach something, and learning new things from each other all the time. So that part has been really, really cool, and made the transition from Illustrator to Photoshop a lot better, because, you know, if I had questions, you know, I had more people to kind of help me, you know, work through a project, or if I had to update something they did last season, you know, I can open that Photoshop file, break apart the layers and say, oh, so that's how they get that treatment. Oh, that's how they did that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a lot more comfortable with Photoshop. I still prefer Illustrator, but I'm still learning a lot of really, really cool things with Photoshop.
Gotcha. So I got a specific question for you, because you're in a very male-dominated industry within a sport that is entirely males.
Yeah.
You also did an internship with Spike, which is very, you know, bro culture as far as what they portray. I don't know that it's necessarily that internally, but, you know, what are the challenges that come with that?
Honestly, it's like, it hasn't been as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, during the interview, you know, they kind of asked me, as far as our creative team, it's, our direct creative team, you know, our creative director, senior designer, part-time designer, and our creative manager or a project manager, you know, they're all guys. But I think because we all have that kind of, we're all designers for one, so that kind of connects us. Between the five of us, you know, we love Star Wars and comic book movies, especially Star Wars stuff. So I think once we kind of figure that out about each other, we just got along like just instantly, like everything just kind of seems, oh, you know, Brit's a girl, you know, these are guys. Once we kind of merged our love of like design and kind of Star Wars stuff, it was good. It was solid. Like, it makes it way easier to work, but they're cool. We all kind of have the same sense of humor. We're into the same movies. We're always quoting the same movies. So that level of connection kind of, you know, overshadows anything, any worries I had about being the only female on the team. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like having four big brothers, pretty much. So it's
cool. Cool. So, you know, since you said you're all design nerds, let's talk about your, how do I phrase this? Your love of all things nerdy. And I'm looking directly at the Funko Pop display right behind you.
Yeah, you can't see the one in front of me. They're everywhere. Oh,
there's more. They're okay.
Yes, they're at my desk at work. Having a house made it a lot better collecting this stuff now in an apartment. It makes it kind of difficult to have limited space.
Feels like everything's on top of you.
Yeah. My mom, she's like, every time I come here, you got another one of those things. But I think I get that a little bit from my dad. Like the comic books, really, my dad, especially the DC, he's more of a DC, he loves Superman, mm-hmm. Batman. And then my uncle, you know, he was my babysitter, you know, when I was younger. And, you know, most kids would get like stories, you know, Little Bo Peep and nursery rhymes and stuff. My uncle read X-Men to me. So that's kind of where it stuck. And going to the movies with him and going to the movies with my dad, it was always, you know, some kind of comic book based movie. And
even so your uncle's grandma, reading you Old Man Logan while everybody else is getting.
Yes, I'm getting all that. I'm getting, you know, Iron Man and the Hulk. And my grandma, my mom's mom, is the one who really got me into like Star Wars and the sci-fi stuff. That's what she loves. So we're pretty much a family of just nerdy people.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
I'm raising my children that way.
That's right. That's the only way you should raise them. That's the best way to raise them. But once I got a little bit older and just trying to learn a little bit more about like the characters and the creativity that goes behind developing those characters and the sets, I would get books for Christmas that break down like these are all the different props in a Star Wars movie or a comic book movie. And these are all the meanings behind them. Just knowing that those aren't just things on a screen to look cool. Like the person who developed it, like actually had a story behind it. And I think that kind of pushed me further into design. I wanted to be like a creator. I wanted to, you know, make things, not just, you know, change things up. You know, I wanted to like build from my idea from scratch and then be able to see it being used or on display somewhere.
Do you think that influenced your starting off wanting to do industrial design?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I will like make up devices, you know, handheld devices or cars, shoes. You know, I designed a whole lot of shoes. I was like, if I was to design a shoe or, you know, launch my own shoe, it would look like this. Or, you know, if I worked at Nike, my shoe would look like this. If I worked at Puma, you know, my shoe would look like this. So that culture, the comic book and the movies and all those things, just kind of the imagination that goes into them, mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to bring into, like, my own work, you know, as a designer. Like, it was just so much wonder. And when you listen to interviews and watch interviews of the people creating this stuff, you're like, man, yeah, that's how I feel. You know, that's, I get you. I'm connecting with you, man. So I love that stuff.
Gotcha. What's your favorite Star Wars movie?
My favorite Star Wars movie? I'd have to say it's The Force Awakens. That the last one was just like, mm-hmm. I think the best for me. It just, I love the characters. I love the story. Even the villain, like, I don't know what it is. My grandma would ask me, why do you like villains so much? But Kylo Ren, I mean, he's like a boss. I mean, he looks so cool. He's got that really cool lightsaber. I just thought it was really cool. I like Rey.
You weren't bothered by the whole little emo temper tantrum he threw in the middle there?
No, because as a creative, sometimes I go there myself. You know, I don't go, you know, smashing stuff, you know.
I hope not. That's not good for your
force
job.
To choke. But in terms,
oh, come on. You know you force choked somebody before.
Nah.
At least in your head.
In my head, sometimes. It's like, but, you know, I try to keep it peaceful. I like to be that peaceful person. I keep it all inside, and then I make a joke. You know, I like to use humor and everything when I can, even when stuff doesn't seem, you know, like it's going the best. I like to use a lot of humor to kind of break the ice or help other people. If I can make somebody
sarcasm to diffuse the situation.
a little bit sometimes. Not so much sarcasm, you know. I like to make memes a lot. I okay. like to live tweet television shows that it's just the funniest thing to me. Like when you can like tweet with other people, you know, about a common show that you all like and these conversations you have. And some of the stuff people come up with is just like, you should be writing for television. Like you guys are like hilarious. Some of the stuff they come up with is just so funny. And it's like that. And then within 140 characters, it's amazing to me. But I like to try to be that funny person, like at family functions, I'm telling jokes and doing impersonations and all this other silly stuff. Even sometimes when I'm supposed to like at church, try to be on my best behavior. My grandma, I'm like, behave. And it's usually to me and my uncle, because he's where we think I get a lot of that humor from. But
is this the same uncle who was exposing you to the X-Men and stuff?
Yes.
Well, that would explain it.
Yes. That's my buddy, my Uncle John.
So, you know, we've touched on your favorite Star Wars movie. Favorite? What's your favorite? I'm just gonna nerd out because most of the people I talk to, I don't get a chance to do the nerdy talk with. What's your favorite comic book and or character?
My favorite character is Iron Man. So, Tony Stark, he was an engineer, pretty much closest thing to an industrial designer you're gonna get. Like, sure. He's kind of sassy. Aside from the alcoholism in the comic books, you know, that's what I wanted to be.
What? You don't want to be an alcoholic?
Well, no.
And you call yourself a fan?
I know. I can't commit that far. So then
probably a good idea.
So when the films came out, it was like just even more epic. So like my last birthday, my 29th birthday, this past March, you know, I told my mom, so this is my last birthday in my 20s. I want to go all out. So she was like, well, what do you want? I was like, I want an Iron Man birthday party. And she was like, are you serious? I was like, yes. So they had, I had a cake. We all wore comic book T-shirts. I got a couple more Funko Pop figures, Marvel figures, action figures. I think I even got like a Lego set. It was all the things that I just loved, you know, that inspired me creatively, but still the nerdy stuff. Iron Man, I mean, totally my favorite. I got so much Iron Man stuff, posters and figures and stuff at my desk and my phone cup, my phone background, Iron Man. Iron Man all the way.
Gotcha. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned was your uncle kind of getting you into that. Has that relationship continued as far as, you know, you still bantering back and forth about comics and things like that?
Oh, yeah. When a movie comes out, you know, he's the first person I text. It's my uncle and then a friend from school, two friends from school who are really into the comics books as well. And we always text each other like within a couple days of a movie coming out and say, have you seen it yet? Because before I was in Charlotte or if I was in North Carolina, I could actually see it with them. And we would, you know, spend hours after talking about it and how it fit within the cinematic universe of that film or within the original storyline in the comic. Mm-hmm. And now we just do that through phone or when I go home, like I'm going home tomorrow. So hopefully my uncle's already seen Doctor Strange will be the one we discuss.
Have you seen it yet?
Yes. Hey, I have a policy. If it's a Marvel movie, you know, I try to see it within the first 2 days. And so my dad was out of town and I was like, well, I'm not going to wait. So I went ahead and saw it. He said, you saw it without me. I was like, sorry.
I'm taking all next week off work and I'm going to go see it one day. I wish my kids were old enough where I felt comfortable taking them to the theater to see it, but I don't think it's probably a good idea to take 2 7-year-olds to,
Yeah, it's visually, it's really cool. But as far as like even the storyline, like, a you know, children kind of grasping it, they might think it looks cool, but they might just walk out just thinking it looks cool. But if you see it, you should definitely check it out in 3D IMAX, you know, at least once.
If I had that option, I would.
Oh, yeah. it was good. It was really cool. It's definitely shot for 3D IMAX.
Yeah.
Or even 3D.
Yeah, believe me, if I had that option, I would go see it in that way. But there's The nearest theater that does that's about an hour and a half away, and I'm not that devoted to going to see it.
Yeah, it costs too much to do all that.
Between that and the Fantastical Beasts coming up this weekend.
Yes. That might be, like, Harry Potter is one that I'm slowly getting into, like, now that all the other films have been done, you know, now they're getting back into this, it kind of makes me want to go back and watch all the Harry Potter stuff. But I saw a preview while I was seeing Doctor Strange. I'm like, actually, this looks pretty cool. So it might be one I check out.
It's getting 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know, that's pretty legit. You know, Rotten Tomatoes, that's serious.
Yeah.
That's serious stuff there.
So I'm trying to – my kids want to see both of those movies. But again, like I said, I cannot justify taking 2 7-year-olds to go see those in the theater.
Yeah, sometimes, like, if there's a movie that I want to go see, like, I've already, like, started plotting, like, whose child can I, like, take, you know, to see this movie? Like, I'll be an aunt in January.
Oh.
I'm like, but I'll see the next movie I want to see is Lego Batman.
I'm yes. Like, I am very happy that I have children for that, because I think I want to see it more than my kids do.
Like, I need, like, I think some little cousins here that I could probably take, but I don't think I should take an infant to see Batman movies. Like, yeah,
you're not going to make friends that way. I can tell you that.
No. Because with my luck, he would start crying, and then I'd have to leave. Be sad.
We took our kids to see Force Awakens, and I mean, they were troopers. We did not expect there to be almost another hour worth of previews and commercials and stuff in front of it.
That was a long one.
But they made it halfway through before they just couldn't sit still anymore.
Yeah.
So, and they loved it. And we went in, when it came out on video, we got it, and they've watched it 3 or 4 times since then.
Yeah. I watched it a couple.
It's good. It's, I would say it's behind Empire is probably my second favorite.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not far behind Empire. So.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray complete, you know, editions on Blu-ray for Christmas. And my dad, when I got back to Georgia, you know, told my dad, like, hey, we should have a marathon. We're going to watch, you know, all of them. And then we'll go see Force Awakens again. And he called my mom. He's like, why did you get this for her and then bring her back here? Because now I have to watch all of them. He did pretty good. He made it. I think through Empire, and he fell asleep, and then
how do you fall asleep during Empire?
He just can't hang. Like, I'm a binger. I love to, you know, binge watch stuff, and he's like, it's not healthy. Like, I take them as personal challenges. I mean, I've done James Bond, I've done Pirates of the Caribbean, I've done like Phase 1 and 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is like, it's like my Olympics. You know, I can't do, you know, physical sports, but I can sit on the couch and watch movies and stretch my mind further than anybody else I know. So.
You can get the couch to conform to your butt just perfectly, so you don't have to move.
And I have this huge sectional that I had at my house. It's perfect for, like, lounging and watching movies all day. I'll get up and I'll do push-ups or something in between.
Oh,
you know,
well.
I totally messed up. But
there you go.
Yeah.
See, that's what I need to do. I'm not good at that part. I'm good at the just lounging, the getting up and exercising in between, not so much. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it just helps kind of keep the blood flow.
Yeah, it's much better than just sitting there and eating Doritos all day.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of wrapping up, you know, I know before we talked on air that you weren't really working on anything personal at the moment and not a ton of freelance, but what are you hoping, you know, what's something that would be like a dream project for you?
I don't know. I would love to do, I think with most people who work in sports, like to be able to develop an identity or a rebrand for a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then to kind of see that identity, you know, come to life. Like, a lot of the stuff that Fan Brands, you know, mm-hmm. is doing, when they kind of show their process and their sketches, and then to kind of see it, you know, plastered on hotels and buses and, you know, big screens and even the stuff like the Final Four, you know, stuff that the guys got to work on, like seeing stuff like that, you know, for a sporting event is really cool. And I think at this point, the closest, and it's still actually, you know, really big and still, like, in my mind, I'm like, I still can't believe I got to work on this, was the logo for Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You know, kind of considering the time that we had to work on it and the level of expectation. I mean, this is, you know, this logo is going to be announcing our partner for the next, you know, for a long time for this stadium.
How many stadiums does Mercedes-Benz have branded with them now?
I know
they've got the Superdome.
The Superdome. And I think there's another one, like a Mercedes-Benz stadium in China? So you might have three or four.
I'm not keeping up with the Chinese stadium market, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know there's another one or two overseas for sure. Because when we did our initial research, we were kind of searching like all of their stadium naming rights and what those buildings look like and what those logos look like, because we didn't want to obviously have anything, you know, that looked like theirs. But our logo is centered around what our stadium looks like. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helped us there. But just whenever my mom or dad attend a game, you know, the dome sits right next to the new stadium construction. Mm-hmm. And they always just tell strangers, you know, hey, my daughter, you know, she worked on that. I'm like, stop telling people. Stop talking to strangers. They point it out, you know, all the time. But deep down, you know, it's something I'm really proud to say I could work on, and that it's just going to be a part of that stadium, you know, for a long time. So being part of that was really, really, really cool.
Awesome. So kind of wrapping up, where can people find you online?
I'm all over the interwebs, on the Twitters and the Instagrams. The one thing I'm not on is Snapchat. So my username usually Britt Davis 704. So that's for Twitter, Dribbble, Instagram. Is usually where I'm the most active, and I'm also on Facebook. Most people, but you can reach me more on probably Twitter and LinkedIn even. You know, for the professional. I try to update it every once in a while, but Twitter is where I'm most social.
Awesome. And we'll link to all that stuff in the show notes too. So we end every podcast by saying, and since you've been to Creative South, you kind of get this, by saying, mm-hmm. Go out and hug some necks, which is just kind of a way of saying, you know, go out and make friends, meet new people. Would you mind taking us out by saying that?
Yes, please, please go out and hug some necks. No matter who they voted for, hug them anyway. We need unity right now.
Damn right. Britt, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You can find out more about Britt on Twitter at BrittDavis704. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jack.inc/design and get up to $75 off your next order when you use promo code CSPodcast16. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.